California, the Golden State, a state with pockets of vast wealth, economic growth, and a robust social safety net, but also the highest poverty rate in the nation. That's why the Cato Project on Poverty and Inequality in California is trying to find innovative solutions to this ongoing crisis.
And welcome to all of our friends from California and across the country. I know we have people tuning in from everywhere in the U.S. and indeed our friends from around the world. We have people watching this from several countries as well. So I want to thank you all for tuning in today. We have a very important conference today on After COVID, Building an Inclusive Economy for California. We are finally seeing a light at the end of the tunnel in the COVID pandemic. And as we begin to recover, we want to ensure that that recovery is equitable and that it is something that all Californians can participate in. And speaking of participation, we would like you to participate in the discussion for this event. You can submit your questions on Twitter if you're watching us through Twitter. You can use the hashtag Cato California. If you're on Facebook Live or YouTube or the Cato event platform, you can simply use the normal question issues that are provided for you there. And of course, there's a special place on the platform if you're tied into the official event platform. So there's lots of ways you can be part of this, and we hope you will ask your questions of our speakers as we move forward. And then, of course, I also want to mention that after some of the panels today, we're going to have special breakout rooms where you can keep the discussion going. So we hope you'll be an active participant rather than just sort of watching this in the background. We really need your input, your ideas, and your questions to make this a success. So thank you very much for that. California is in an interesting position. Certainly, even before the pandemic, it was a state, as we mentioned in the introduction, that it was experiencing solid economic growth. In the 5 years before the pandemic hit, the average economic growth was 5.8%, which is quite reasonable. But even then, there were signs of trouble. CNBC, in its annual index of top states for business, ranks California as 32nd in the nation, which I guess is okay, but certainly nothing to be particularly proud of. And Forbes ranks California 47th for business costs and 40th for regulatory environment. So clearly, even before the pandemic hit, there were barriers to entrepreneurship and barriers to business in California. But those were made much worse by the pandemic. San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland are all in the top 10 U.S. cities for small businesses that have closed permanently as a result of the pandemic and lockdowns and other associated public health measures that have been taking place. You have three of the top 10 cities for shutting down small business. And in fact, San Francisco is the number one city in the country for losing small business. Half of small businesses in San Francisco have closed permanently as a result of the pandemic. That's an enormous cost. And it's a cost being felt by all Californians, of course, but it's particularly low-income Californians, typically just underserved populations, minority populations, and who businesses have always struggled. They have been hit particularly hard. It's estimated that low-wage workers suffered job losses in the 24% range at the height of the pandemic, compared to just 5 or 6% in the top income categories. And in terms of the recovery, we've talked repeatedly about a K-shaped recovery in which people who have white-collar jobs and high incomes have found it rather easy to return or to ride out the pandemic. I, for example, was able easily to work from home, to simply move my business here. Most Cato scholars have been able to do that. But if you're a waiter or a waitress, it's much harder to try to do something like that and simply pick up your boot and start working from home during the pandemic. And it's very likely that you may not have a business to go back to. Among households with incomes below $40,000 a year in California, 69% reported that someone in their household had lost a job, had reduced hours, or had lost wages as a result of the pandemic. That compares to only about 5% of people in the top income categories who felt those same things. We're holding this conference because we want to take advantage of the opportunities in rebuilding California to ensure that we have an inclusive economy in California. That is one in which every Californian can participate and which opportunities are there for every Californian to start a business, to find a job, to basically to be able to support themselves and their families, to become masters of their own destiny, masters of their own fate. That is ultimately the whole underlying idea of the Cato Project on Poverty and Inequality in California. We want to be able to allow people to be in charge of their own lives. We believe that individuals can do more for themselves, the government can do, but we want to certainly want to look at those barriers that government is erecting right now to people being able to do that. And so we've got a number of scholars today. We've got people representing academia. We've got people representing business. We've got activists. We've got people who are taking a wide variety of viewpoints on this. Ideologically, it's a cross-section. We have liberals, conservatives, libertarians. I guarantee you will find somebody saying something you don't like, which is just fine. I'm sure I don't like everything that everyone's going to say. And that's why we want you to get involved. Once again, you can submit your questions and comments through a variety of platforms. If you're on Twitter, you can use the hashtag Cato California. Otherwise, you can use these designated question platforms that are with each of the ways you're watching this. So with that, we're going to go ahead and get started. Our first speaker today is my colleague, Chris Edwards, who is Director of Tax Policy Studies at Cato. He is also the author of Downsizing Government and the editor of downsizinggovernment.org. He has just released a new study that's come out called Entrepreneurs and Regulation, Removing State and Local Barriers to Business. And he's going to tell us a little bit about how California is doing compared to other states, and some of the problems that he's found in California in terms of business growth and development. So with that, I'll turn it over to you. Chris, it's all yours.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. As Mike touched on, this is a very important conference because California has a lot of recovery to do. California's unemployment rate at 8.3% is still substantially above the national average of 6%. So California needs jobs, and therefore it needs entrepreneurs to create jobs. Startup businesses create most net new jobs in the economy. So ensuring that California has a supportive environment for new businesses is crucial for a broad-based recovery. Restaurants, of course, were hammered during the pandemic last year, with thousands of them closing across California. So California will need thousands and thousands of restaurant startups in coming months and coming years to make up what was lost. So what can policymakers do to remove barriers to new restaurants and other types of startups? Well, in a new Cato study, I argue that unneeded regulations, there are unneeded regulations in every city and every state that can and should be reduced to increase entrepreneurship. I'm gonna run through a few of those suggestions today. Some of these you will certainly will have heard of and indeed will be discussed today. Others may not be so familiar to you. So first, excessive occupational licensing is a problem in every state. Some occupations may not need to be licensed. A system of voluntary certification may be a much better way to open access to careers, especially for entry-level people. Excessively high minimum wages can be a barrier to startup businesses, especially businesses that hire a lot of entry-level workers, such as restaurants. We all want wage growth at the bottom end, but we have to be cognizant of the fact that small businesses tend to have much lower wage structures than big businesses. And indeed, that's one of the ways that small businesses are able to compete against big businesses. About half of all minimum wage workers are employed at businesses with less than 100 people. So the minimum wage is really an important issue for small businesses. Now let me move to discuss a few regulatory barriers that you may be less familiar with, or at least that get less attention in the media. One of these is alcohol licensing for restaurants. 18 states, including California, impose caps on the number of alcohol licenses by county. California counties have a set number of licenses. And so if you want to open a restaurant, you have to buy one of these often on the open market. And the costs in some cities of an alcohol license for a restaurant can run up to $300,000, at least in some cities, at least before the pandemic. This is a big issue for startup restaurants because, of course, restaurants earn much of their profits from booze. These laws tend to be biased against lower income and independent entrepreneurs who can't afford the high license costs. Alcohol license caps are an important barrier to economic development in lower income neighborhoods. Let me quote from a 2018 San Francisco news story on this issue. Quote, with the full cost of a liquor license in San Francisco now running as much as $300,000, restaurant and bar owners in the city's outlying lower income neighborhoods have all been but drained of the ability to serve liquor and cocktails at restaurants, unquote. When states impose alcohol license caps like California, it is the fancy restaurants in the wealthy parts of cities that get them, and it creates a barrier to economic development and entrepreneurs in lower income areas of cities. So this is an important issue, I think, that California reformers should look at. Let me talk about marijuana laws. There is a similar problem with marijuana. Pot legalization in California was a big step forward, and it opened many opportunities for entrepreneurs. But California, like a number of other states, have really botched the implementation of marijuana legalization with too many regulations. Only one third of California cities and counties allow pot businesses, and nearly all of them put strict limits on the number of businesses. This works against independent and lower income entrepreneurs. News stories suggest that it's often the bigger businesses and the political insiders that get the licenses in California. The Los Angeles Times reported in November that, quote, since California voters legalized recreational cannabis 4 years ago, allegations of conflicts of interest, bribery, and bias in the permitting process have plagued cities and counties, unquote. California cities, quote, allow pot operations typically place strict limits on the number of licenses they issue as well as their locations. With permits limited, it is speculated that they could be worth millions of dollars and competition for them can be fierce, unquote. There's been many stories in the California media. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with the unfairness of the marijuana licensing procedures. The way forward, it seems to me, is to liberalize these rules, to repeal these arbitrary caps on the number of marijuana businesses. Another issue I write about in my upcoming Cato study is the whole issue of home-based businesses. About half of America's 30 million businesses are home-based, and most new business startups start in homes and garages. Most famously, companies like Amazon, Apple, and Hewlett-Packard started in entrepreneur garages. A huge variety of businesses, of course, is run out of homes. Daycare providers and music teachers and small-scale food producers, yoga teachers, dog groomers, hairstylists, bloggers, high-tech startups, and many, many others. Of course, with the internet and new tools like Zoom, it's easier than ever and more efficient to run a small business out of your home. There's one big problem, however, and that is local government zoning rules that ban or restrict home-based businesses in residential neighborhoods. There are, of course, legitimate concerns about externalities of running businesses out of homes in residential neighborhoods. But in my new study, I discuss that, in my view, many local governments lean far too much in the direction of banning or restricting home-based businesses. This is a really important issue because homes provide a low-cost incubator for small businesses that may not otherwise not be viable if entrepreneurs had to rent space and they had to pay for childcare and they have to pay for commuting costs. Home-based businesses create opportunities for people like single moms who may be caring for children or maybe caring for elderly adults. So I think this whole issue of home-based businesses, it's got some attention, but I think there should be a lot more focus on local governments on liberalizing these rules. A final issue I'll touch on this morning is the whole issue of local building permitting for brick and mortar startups. Building permitting continues to be a very lengthy and costly process in many cities. Of course, in California, the whole building permitting issue has been in the spotlight because of the high cost of home building in California and the resulting high prices for homes. But this is also a very important issue for small businesses. Businesses such as restaurants often wait many months, often a year longer, just to get the permits and licenses they need to open a business, all the while paying monthly rent for a space that they can't utilize and earn revenue on. So these sorts of costly delays may not be so bad for some big businesses. But again, for independent entrepreneurs, for people with less money, I think this whole issue of permitting reform and speeding permitting and licensing at the city level is very important to spur more startup businesses. So I'm going to wrap up there. I think there's a lot of work to do by state and local governments, including in California, to create a better environment for entrepreneurs, both home-based entrepreneurs and brick-and-mortar entrepreneurs. I'm going to pass it back to Mike now, and I look forward to listening to other comments today. Again, this is it's a great topic for our conference. Thanks a lot, Mike. Mike, you need to unmute.
Knew that would happen eventually. Bill Gates talking to me through my COVID vaccine. It just, happens from time to time. I was thanking you for that and saying you gave us a lot to think about. And once again, it tends to think that we are on the people who are well connected and the people who know how to play the game, the elites, so to speak, seem to be able to do pretty well under these type of conditions. But it's the marginalized communities, the people who haven't been part of the game for a long time, have been locked out, they seem to do even worse with all these regulations. So people talk a lot about good intentions in these regulations when they're put in, but they tend to hurt the very people that they want to help most. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Once again, I want to tell people that they can ask their questions on Twitter using the hashtag Cato California, but they can also simply type them in on the event platform, on Swapcard, on YouTube, or on Facebook Live. We'll take questions from all of those places and people can send them in. A couple of questions, not surprisingly, immediately go to housing and land use because it's such a huge problem in California. The question was, what about zoning reform to make projects, particularly infill projects, easier to do and basically lower costs? What did you encounter in your studies in that regard?
So, I mean, there's two ways to think about this. One, you need legislative reforms to reform zoning to allow more, as that questioner talked about, infill development and more higher denser development. So you need legislation for that. But a whole separate thing that cities can make reforms administratively is simply speeding the permitting process. I mean, I've read about cities across the country that have substantially shortened the permitting, the time it takes to run the permits through the system. And these seem like common sense reforms that no one should be against. It's just a matter of city bureaucracies speeding up the processing. You know, I touched a little bit about on corruption and marijuana. The marijuana and alcohol related licensing corruption comes because there are caps put on the number of these business licenses. But there's also corruption in many cities across the country in building permitting, because the permitting is such a lengthy and cumbersome process. You will get businesses bribing and you will get insider deals to give the permits quicker to the insiders, the people with the political connections who maybe are willing to pay bribes. Permitting reform to speed up the processes is just, it's really important to for independent entrepreneurs and to reduce these governance problems.
So all sticking with questions of land use, but tying it into your primary specialty of taxation, I've got a question from Twitter. That what about the land appreciation? Is land, you know, the sort of unearned income of land appreciation, is that a more acceptable tax? Milton Friedman, I believe, wrote about that a little bit. I know in California, of course, we have Proposition 13, which limits taxes on residences and businesses in terms of property taxes. Often that gets passed on in terms of higher building fees and impact fees for businesses. What's your thoughts on Prop 13 and on land taxes generally?
So, you know, in general, as a lot of people know, Prop 13, you know, I'm in favor of limiting government's taxing power. Prop 13 was, of course, a very complex way to do it and has created a lot of inequities. I mean, one reform that I'd like to see is equal taxation across the board, residential, commercial, industrial. I mean, one of the problems now is that commercial properties often pay higher tax rates. I'm not sure about California, but in many states and cities, commercial properties pay much higher tax rates than residential. I don't think that's good economics. And it also is a really anti-investment provision in a lot of tax codes. So I think a lot of work needs to be done in evening out property tax rates. If we make the base broader, we can bring the rate down and make it equal across the board for everybody.
Chris, you one of your things in your study was you sort of looked at things across all 50 states. You made some comparisons, things like that. Are there states that are doing things right that where California's getting things wrong? Or are there states that California could learn from on anything in particular?
Right. So some states. So let's, you know, take these issues one by one. In marijuana, Colorado has a much more liberal system. It's easier to get business licenses for marijuana in Colorado. That has in Colorado, it doesn't seem to have a corruption problem there. It's easier for entrepreneurs to break into the business. Some things California does well on. I noticed that on occupational licensing, California is actually, it tends to have fewer occupations need licensing. So California does well there. Of course, on taxation, California is a high tax state, which is never good for business and entrepreneurs. So the results of my study come out in a couple weeks. California does not do overall, although, like I said, it does well on some things like occupational licensing. And I pointed out that so with the restaurant alcohol licenses, my research found that there's 18 states that put these caps on city restaurant licenses, one of them being California. You know, these should be completely repealed. The other 30 states don't have such caps on restaurant alcohol licenses. But there are states actually even worse than worse situation than California. New Jersey has this really draconian restaurant alcohol licensing regime where it can cost up to $1 million to get a restaurant license with a full alcohol license in New Jersey, which is one of the reasons. There's a lot of top chefs. They put their restaurants in New York City and Manhattan and not in New Jersey, even though there's a lot of high earners in New Jersey that would like to go to top restaurants. They simply can't get the license they need to open the restaurants in New Jersey. So, you know, it seems like an obscure issue, but that the whole issue of alcohol licensing at restaurants, it's actually really important in a lot in these states, the 18 states with caps on the number of licenses.
Well, thanks. Warren Matthews, who actually on the event platform, writes to us from Houston, where he's watching this, and he notes that Houston has no zoning. He also points out, and I think he applies it to zoning, but I think it applies to the whole host of these regulations that you're talking about, is that politicians benefit from these regulations. And this is a great way to rake in campaign contributions is by promising various things in regards to regulation, keeping out one group making erecting barriers to entry to protect incumbents, or promising that you'll cut through the red tape for some other incumbent or so on. How can you break the cycle, if you will, where you know the people with the power to give money to the politicians who give more power to the people with money, and it just keeps circulating that way?
All I can suggest is that it's up to California residents to sort of learn best practices for a lot of these industries from other states. For entrepreneurs and businesses to point out that, you know, a lot of these, there's a lot less regulations in neighboring states and lower taxes than in California. Hopefully, you know, we see some, a lot of discussion about businesses and entrepreneurs leaving California. You know, hopefully the California policymakers wake up and realize that, you know, this could be a long-term drain on the state. So that commenter was absolutely right. I talked about caps and the number of marijuana and alcohol license is in California and other states. You know, if you Google, there are so many stories about corruption related to these arbitrary caps that city governments put on business licenses, and it makes no sense. I am in favor of just, with marijuana businesses, you know, certainly local zoning, regulations should apply to marijuana businesses, just like any other businesses. If you don't want, you know, marijuana businesses near schools and that sort of thing, that's great. That's fine. But it's these arbitrary caps where a city will say, you know, limit the number of marijuana businesses to say 10 or 15. It just creates this terrible dynamic of insiders trying to get the inside track in City Hall.
Well, thank you, Chris. I think we're going to leave it there. I do want everyone to know that we're going to be moving after this directly into our next panel, which is on economic growth and underserved populations. But I wanted to thank you, Chris, for being part of this. I hope people, as you said, it's a couple of weeks, it'll be coming out. I hope people will look up online your new study on entrepreneurs and regulation, removing state and local barriers to new business. I say I've read a draft of it, and it's a particularly good study. Once again, I want to remind people that they can be part of this discussion, that they should submit questions in the question box on their virtual event platforms, on Facebook Live and on YouTube. Also using Twitter, using the hashtag Cato California.